Gender, misogyny and extremist violence are inextricably linked. That's according to my next guest, who argues in a new book that mass shooters, terrorists and violent extremists are overwhelmingly misogynists, homophobes or transphobes, even if they are also motivated by other factors. Cynthia Miller Idris is a sociologist and professor at the American University in Washington, D.C., where she's the founding director of the Polarization and Extremism Research and Innovation Lab. She's in Australia promoting her new book called Man Up, The New Misogyny and the Rise of Violent Extremism. Cynthia is also meeting with local community and government leaders. Cynthia Miller Idris, welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
Cynthia, you and I have spoken over a number of years and over several US federal election campaigns. In your view, what's drawn you to this view that misogyny is linked and in some cases driving acts of violent extremism in the West?
Well, you know, I opened the book with really an apology to the field and to the public for not paying attention as I should have earlier to this trend and to these connections. I think it's so glaringly obvious once you start to see it that you can't unsee it, but it's also so invisible so much of the time. But when you start to look at it, in the U.S. alone, for example, 60% of all mass shooters have a documented history of domestic and intimate partner violence. And that is only the documented cases where we know there's tremendous underreporting. And it also doesn't include things like stalking or harassment or online misogyny or abuses, homophobic attacks, or even things like sexual assault or rape. So when you start to look at every case, I couldn't find one in the U.S., and I'm sure there are, but I stopped looking eventually. It's every single case has some sort of history of gendered motivations, misogynistic violence against women or the LGBTQ community. And so it's a major predictor. It's also a red flag, and it's a sign that there are ways we could prevent some of these violent extremist mobilizations earlier if we knew other types of violence to look for.
What do you think the media and politicians often get wrong about misogyny, violence, and internet trolls?
I think, first of all, they think of it as a personal issue. So even the way that we define misogyny typically is hatred of women. I use a different definition, which is the philosopher Kate Mann defines it as the law enforcement function of the patriarchy. It's more of a kind of gender policing, which means that women can do it as well as men. It also means that boys and young men are often affected by this as well, with the kind of bullying and sanctioning that comes when they don't measure up to their expected performance of gendered norms. And so I think we overlook it. I think we also often obscure it. So when we had the assassination of local politicians, state politicians in Minnesota, for example, because they were abortion advocates or LGBTQ allies, the media really only covered it. I never saw a single mention of that as a gendered attack. We just covered it as progressive politicians being attacked. And so I think there's a lot of ways that we are uncomfortable talking about gendered motivations, are uncomfortable talking about gendered norms, even when they're right there staring us in the face.
But it's not only, of course, been what would be labelled as progressive politicians who've been targeted. Right. There were two attempts at President Donald Trump prior to his re-election. We also saw Charlie Kirk being murdered and assassinated as well. Are there dangers in trying to have a one-size-fit-all approach here when sometimes the targets and the motivations, do they vary?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the things that's helpful about looking at gender and misogyny is not, I'm not arguing that these are the primary motivations in every case, but that they are also often foundational components that link these precursors in mobilizations. And so we see this
but
in Islamist.
Is correlation and causation the same thing?
Yeah, they're not the same thing. And it's also not saying that the targets are often totally different than women or LGBTQ folks, but the perpetrators have a history of these types of beliefs and actions targeting women or gendered motivations. And so the argument there is that if we, for the prevention side, which I work on, if you can pay attention to some of those earlier warning signs, we might be able to intervene before someone mobilizes to much more violent action targeting racial and ethnic minorities or religious minorities, for example.
Is there any evidence-based early intervention programs that have been successful in the United States? We know there have been some protests programs in identifying, yeah. but rather to disarm, not to disarm, to de-radicalize those who might be on this path.
Yeah, the evidence on de-radicalization and disengagement is incredibly thin. There are successful programs that do it, but it's very one-on-one. Therapeutic intervention often takes years and can't be done unless the person is willing to participate and be de-radicalized. It's not unlike addiction treatment or something like that. What is effective, where there is a lot more evidence of scalability, is in the prevention at the primary level, preventing people from being persuaded by propaganda or conspiracy theories. So I run a research lab called Peril that has a lot of evidence about equipping parents, caregivers, teachers, mental health counselors, but also how to help young people themselves and older adults recognize manipulative tactics that might open up pathways. And so that's a much better bang for your buck, if you will, in terms of investing in scalability.
And with going back to some of these links that you're seeing in your research, and I'm thinking again about the case of Charlie Kirk. He'd been quite strongly criticised by some members of the trans and queer community in the United States for his comments about those communities. So yes. How does this kind of analysis of yours fit with such a high-profile case as that, which almost seems to be the reverse?
Yeah, I think that, and this is where it's not just misogyny, but gendered motivations, I think, that play a role. And we still don't really know.
It was a male suspect, as far as we know.
Yes, exactly. And he did express in a text to his partner that he was, the only real indication we have on motivation of that is that he expressed that he was tired of so much hate. And so that has been interpreted as a potential motivation around hatred of transgender because his partner is trans, his roommate was trans. And so there is that possibility, but we don't really know enough. That's why it's being regarded as a case that's probably on the left, but it wasn't like he left a manifesto that made that clear. I think that case actually is a much more interesting case of the thing that interests me the most about that case are the memes that he left on the bullets, because it also indicates like this incredibly highly online young person who was using a high profile attack to communicate back with an online community of other young men. And that is a kind of, that's another type of thing that we have seen a lot of lately, is the gamification, if you will, of some of these elements, leaving things like Pokemon, like leaving little breadcrumbs behind or Easter eggs, but also live streaming attacks. And so that's a kind of youth cultural phenomenon among young men that we're also seeing now, including, you know, in Christchurch in this region of the world.
You're in Australia. In addition to promoting your book, you're also meeting with community and government leaders. What message are you giving to them?
Yeah, I was brought over by a phenomenal research network here called AVERT, which is, I think, one of the leading research networks on terrorism in the world. And they have arranged for a number of meetings with government stakeholders. And so across Melbourne and Canberra and Sydney. And I'm really honored to be a part of those conversations and have the chance to talk. And I think Australia's much further ahead in the terrorism and violent extremism world on thinking about these intersections of misogyny. There are many more reports and initiatives and prevention opportunities. So I'm hoping to learn from them as much as they from me, but I've been asked to share sort of findings from the book and also from the research lab on the prevention evidence that we have.
Cynthia Miller-Idris, so thank you very much for being my guest this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Professor Cynthia Miller-Idris is a sociologist and extremism expert from the American University in Washington, D.C., currently in Australia. Her book is titled Man Up, The New Misogyny and the Rise of Violent Extremism.